There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile on this Cyber Monday, and we'll talk more about that in just a second. Coming up on the show today, hour number two. So all the discussion, President started it, and also Secretary Zinke, about how the forests are managed in California. Did that, was that a contributing factor to the forest fires? Well, a actual forester that knows this stuff and is not just surmising is going to join us in hour number two. A buddy of mine is going to kind of fill us in, so you got questions and all that. That's at 1 o'clock. We'll talk more about that. Also take you to the border, the latest from down at San Ysidro and San Diego. That's coming up. But what most of y'all are busy doing, I know you're supposedly on the clock and you're dutifully working right now, but you're probably checking the Cyber Monday deals as you go about your work today. And it's good because I have somebody who's an expert in this, and lucky for me, also one of my good buddies and good to talk to again. You remember him from WKRG, now with WFLA-TV in Tampa, all things digital, all things web and tech, and just all around good guy, JB Buono, checking in from Tampa. Thank you, man.
No, I miss. Hello to everybody in Mobile, and hello to everybody on the Gulf Coast. Hope everybody's having a good Cyber Monday.
Yeah, I don't know how you celebrate other than buying things. I was watching your live video from WFLA earlier, and you—if this TV stuff, if the reporting stuff doesn't work out, you could like dominate a QVC, because by the end of your discussion there, I had like five pages open. I was like, I need to buy this, I need to buy that. You had me going on some of those deals.
Well, yeah. The truth is that people love saving money. Saving money is becoming really an American tradition this time of year, and people are just looking for, you know, ways to, you know, make their wallet stretch even further, make their dollar stretch even further. And we're seeing so many ridiculous deals this particular Cyber Monday, really since Black Friday, really since Thanksgiving evening. Maybe the moment that you put down your fork on Thanksgiving, these deals started, and some of those deals starting even earlier than that. That people are just getting online and they're trying to save as much money as they can to buy for as many people as they can, and also selfishly just buy for themselves because they want all this cool tech or all these great deals out there. If you're smart with when you buy, you can get more, and that's what people have really realized over the last few years.
Yeah, but the idea of it just being Cyber Monday, I mean, you just mentioned it. It's becoming this, they even call it a Cyber Week here, and like you said, this starts off with Thanksgiving. So the definition of, okay, well, this starts this next thing, I don't know that that's as real anymore, because you're online shopping on Thanksgiving like you are on Monday. Are the deals any better today?
I mean, Amazon started a lot of their deals, Walmart.com starting a lot of their deals like the first week of November. They're almost branding it almost as if it's a cyber month. So it's really hard to say for sure when the best deals come around. But what we're seeing from retailers, both big and small, is that, yes, Cyber Monday is still an institution. It's still a big thing. They still have exclusive deals that you'll only find on Cyber Monday, or what now some sites are calling Cyber Week. But they don't care what day of the week it is. They don't care if it's Thanksgiving. They don't care if it's Black Friday, Cyber Monday. They could invent some holiday for Tuesday. It doesn't matter. They just want you to buy from them. If the best deals are on Thanksgiving, then you're going to see other competing retailers start putting their best deals on Thanksgiving night. And that's what we're seeing online, because so many people are opting for the convenience of online shopping. And are there great deals out there on Cyber Monday? Yes, but a lot of the best deals that we've been seeing on Cyber Monday were also available as early as Black Friday as well. So retailers are staggering out their deals over you know, several days to make sure that you're coming back and buying more and being like, oh my goodness, I only have $100 left, but oh, look at what they just put out on Target.com. They are staggering deals that way, but we're also seeing more deals emerge earlier than ever before. Like I said, as early as Thanksgiving evening for a lot of them.
JB, I want to talk about, this is kind of not even specific to Cyber Monday, but this idea of shopping online when there's so much out there, so many things. You know, I worry because, like, listening to you run down the deals today, you had me interested in things that weren't even on my list. You know, so if somebody's approaching this, whether it be Cyber Monday or this period from Thanksgiving on through this week, you go out there and you say, okay, I'm buying whatever tech gadget it is. We'll start off with that. But you go online, and that, it's not exactly that one that has the deep sale. It's another one, right? I mean, there's, you know, you're looking at, I want to get this iPad. Well, that iPad's not on sale, but this other one is. I mean, that's one of the temptations. You end up kind of getting off your main track.
Yeah, where people aren't necessarily having, like, a specific item on their list, like exactly what they want, but they'll just put, all right, listen, I need a new tablet. And then when Black Friday rolls around or when Cyber Monday rolls around, instead of looking for that very specific iPad model or that very, you know, specific Samsung Galaxy tablet, they're looking for, you know, whatever the best deal is, whatever is the best bang for their buck. And one of the craziest deals that we saw today, Sean, one of those deals that started on Black Friday was Apple's latest iPad for $250. And Apple, a company never known for deep discounts on their items this time of year, they're, you know, because they're Apple, they only want to discount their projects marginally, just a little bit. $250 for the latest iPad, the base model, is considered one of the most eye-popping tech deals in recent years. And we were actually on Facebook Live when they sold out on Walmart.com. It was like the last website. So people are, yes, do they have specific items on their list? Sure, but once a great deal comes along, the temptation is just too much to resist. And, you know, you get out your credit card and you spend $250 on an iPad. And it's not as much as, wow, I just blew $250 on an iPad, as much as it is, I just saved almost $100 by buying it now and not next year or not 6 months prior. So people are looking for the deal. They just want, like I said, an American tradition, saving money. And this is the time of year to do it. And we're seeing, I mean, record numbers both on Cyber Monday, on Black Friday, everything across the board. I'm looking at the numbers right now. Everything's up. Cyber Monday is up 17%. I think Black Friday online sales were up like 23.5%. I mean, we're talking about a lot of people who are just spending money this weekend because they know if they spend now, it's going to be the longest stretch of their dollar.
Yeah, and that's a good point. It's just this, although I think even if the prices are closer to what they'd pay elsewhere or another time, people are starting to get in this habit of not actually getting up and going to a store. The idea of having all those deals brought to them and served up on their on the screen of their phone or on their laptop or wherever, their tablet, they're used to, you know, y'all all come and pitch to me here. I'm not going to go everywhere.
Right, and we're seeing a reverse trend now. And this is where things are really starting to get interesting and I want everybody to remember this for, like, put this in the piggy bank for next Black Friday. Because what we're starting to see is, because so many people are, you know, opting for the convenience of online shopping, what we're starting to see are shorter lines across the country. In most cities across the country, Black Friday lines in person were short. I mean, were shorter. And we're seeing that the deals are lasting longer in person because of so many people that are opting for online shopping. A deal that normally on a Black Friday maybe 5 years ago would sell out in 2 hours might now be available for 6 hours at your local Walmart or your local Target or your local Kohl's. I mean, we're seeing the trend now kind of like reverse and buck itself because of how immensely popular online shopping has become. So, people don't like really waiting in line for stuff. But what we're seeing is that on Black Friday, instead of waiting, you know, hours in line for that 6 o'clock opening on Thanksgiving Eve, you could leave at 8:30 at night, 9 o'clock at night, 2 hours after stores have opened. You could go to your local store, your local retailer, and there are still deals available because of the overwhelming amount of people that want the convenience of online shopping. So things, there's a lot of interesting trends here going on, and people should remember that for next year, because so many people are going to be opting for online shopping next year that some of the best deals might be available and extended and ready for you to capitalize on actually in person at your local store versus, you know, the frustration of going to, let's say, a Walmart.com, adding something to your cart, and things selling so fast that with by the time that you actually go to punch in your credit card information or hit the checkout button, boof, it's gone. It disappears because it's sold out. So we might actually see more of a demand in the years to come in online shopping versus, you know, the in-person being there at your store on Thanksgiving or Black Friday shopping.
I love it. I mean, counterintuitive, zigging when everybody else is zagging kind of stuff. I will put that in. Hold on. I'm plugging that in my phone here to remember to do this next year at Thanksgiving. Just joining us, talking to our buddy J.B. Pino. Of course, you remember him from News 5 with WFLA-TV in Tampa. Still doing great work in the world of web and tech. Speaking of which, with the robots and all that good stuff out there, I heard you mention earlier a discussion of the robot vacuums. Now, this is something that years and years ago that Roomba came out, but now they've got competitors out there, and it seems to be something, a kind of a hot sector in buying today.
Yeah, this is, you know, every year it seems that we're seeing a different trend pop up or a certain hot item that people are gravitating towards. And last year, if you remember, it was the Instapot. It was the multi-function pressure cooker that you could throw a bunch of your ingredients in, and voila, in a couple of hours or even less, you have a meal that was pretty easy to prepare because it was all done, all the work was done by the Instapot. That was a huge get last year, and still is a huge get this year, but the trend that we're seeing really emerge this year is a lot of people getting robot vacuums because of the immense progress technology has made over the last few years. So robot vacuums were a little bit more problematic, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago. They had trouble with certain types of carpet. They had trouble moving from tile to carpet or carpet to tile. They didn't pick up as much. The suction wasn't great. The battery wasn't great. Most of the problems with robot vacuums have not only, you know, just disappeared and are they non-existent, not only are they great pieces of technology to have for the home, but they're also falling in price. The one that I had on Facebook Live was a Shark robot vacuum that normally is in the $300 range that was on sale for $170 and on Walmart.com. I don't know if it's still available now, but it was available at the time, and there were a lot of people capitalizing on it because word of mouth is starting to get out. People are buying robot vacuums, telling their friends, their brothers, their sisters, their aunts, their uncles. They're telling them how convenient it is and how great they do to get into corners and get around tables. Again, the technology coming so far, this is probably going to be one of the more popular items to buy this year and even next year are these robot vacuums, just because of how far that they've come. And also, they're also really funny with the dog or cat.
Yeah, they are. They're highly entertaining.
If you have a dog at home and you get your cell phone out and rolling if you open up a robot vacuum this Christmas or this holiday, because the dog's reaction to seeing a robot vacuum move around, or even a cat too, is pretty hilarious. And there are videos all over YouTube of dogs having a lot of fun with these robot vacuums.
Yeah, and you can get multiple angles by putting the GoPro on top of the robot vacuum and getting that video.
Yes, the GoPro that you got two Black Fridays ago. Yeah, that same one.
and JB, it's not out for this Christmas, but by next year I will have my aftermarket modifications for those robot vacuums. It's going to be like a cow catcher is on a locomotive. It's going to be a Lego clearing thing that's going to go. This ring will go around the robot vacuum to push the Legos out of the way so the vacuum can push on.
Yeah, you need the one that's not only gonna suck in that spare sock or pair of or pair of shorts, but also do the laundry for you all in the same mechanism. That's what you really need, Sean.
I'll be getting those ready for next year. Okay, if people want to, while they're out there on the web today, find what you're doing, follow you, where do they go?
Yeah, they go to you can find me on WFLA JB Buno. It was formerly WKRG JB Buno in Mobile, but and I'm now in Tampa with my fiance here. She is a Tampa native, so I am now here in Tampa, Florida. I just wanted to send some well wishes for the holidays. Hope everybody in Mobile and on the Gulf Coast has a phenomenal holiday, and I love that area so much. I miss it so much. I miss so many friends that I have there, all the great folks over at WKRG. And I hope that everybody has a phenomenal holiday. And I will be seeing you for Mardi Gras at some point. I will be absolutely coming back and making my face. Just getting out there for Mardi Gras. And we just can't wait. Me and my fiance both can't wait to see everybody.
I can't wait to get y'all back. Tell Devin and I said hello and thanks for checking in with us.
Yes, thank you. And everybody, again, have a great holiday.
There you go. JB Pugno checking in. Some Cyber Monday deal talk. Coming back, we'll take you to the border. Brendan Kirby joins us next.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, big thank you to JB for checking back in with us back here in Mobile from his new haunts there in Tampa. And we do have Brendan Kirby coming up here after the bottom of the hour news break. But I do want to, speaking of news, get a little bit of today's presser. This was just about an hour and change ago. Mayor Sandy Stimson making the announcement that another year is green-lighted here for the Carnival Fantasy. Let's go to that.
Okay. All right. Well, we certainly appreciate everybody being here in the cruise terminal this morning for some exciting news. Today, I will sign an extension to the contract, which is another extension for 1 year to cruise through November of 2019. This is the second extension that Carnival has agreed to sign, which we're very excited about. It will be placed on the city council agenda tomorrow for them to act on also tomorrow, as I hope that it will pass. Very important that it does. The excitement to me is this is evidence of them re-signing this contract, of a great relationship that has developed over the last couple of years with Carnival. Not only are we providing an amenity for our citizens in the Mobile area, but the state of Alabama and the surrounding states, this has made a huge financial swing or impact on the city of Mobile. 4 or 5 years ago, maintaining this terminal and paying debt service was costing us $2 million that just had to come out of our general fund to pay that service of debt and pay those expenses. Today, we have $6.5 million of revenue being generated by the cruise terminal. It has nothing to do with the taxes going to the lodging and businesses. So $6.5 million of revenue, of which about $2 million of that is profit. That $2 million of profit is going back into the maintenance of the terminal. So we're very excited that no longer is the terminal a burden on the city, but it's actually become a revenue generator and providing another tourist things for tourists to do as they come to Mobile. And over the last couple of years, we have ranked very high in customer satisfaction. All the metrics that Carnival uses having to do with customer satisfaction, Mobile is right at the top. And that just doesn't happen. I mean, there's a great team of people that work together to make it happen. So think about this. Every time a ship comes in, between disembarking and embarking, there'll be 5,400 people. There's 540 cars to be parked. And there's 9,000 pieces of luggage to be handled, and all that's got to be done in 8 hours. So, we have the Metro Cruise Services, which are our longshoremen, about 40 to 45 longshoremen that are handling all that luggage, making sure that the ship is tied up properly, all that's good stuff. We also have the Concord Shore Services, the American Guard, Mobile Police Department, the Customs Services, and Visit Mobile, and I'm sure I've left out some, but a great team effort really to make all that happen in the period of time that we have to do it. I would also want to give a special thanks to Pat Brennan and Sheila Garganis, who have been doing this for the last couple of years, and they're responsible for making sure that everybody works together as a team. We're continuing to build momentum, because every time a ship comes in, it's full. And I'll ask the question, I'll say, well, they say it's filled beyond maximum capacity. And that's the answer I always get. And I'm thinking, how do you get filled beyond maximum capacity? But they do that, and it depends on how many people are sleeping in a room. So, great things happening as far as the customer satisfaction, the way we're handling the ship. And I'd like to say that this helps us as a city to become recognized as a destination city. And so, grateful for Carnival for giving us this opportunity, for another year to do this for those that are involved. I got several people that are going to make remarks this morning. Councilman Fred Richardson will make a couple of remarks, followed up by the captain of the ship, and then David Clark will do cleanup, talk about Visit Mobile and waterfront activation. So this time I'll turn it over to Councilman Fred Richardson.
Good morning to everybody. Little week, come on. I just want to say that we are thrilled that Carter is going to extend his contract, and on behalf of the members of the Mobile City Council here and the more than 200,000 citizens in the city of Mobile, we're going to assure you that if you bring that ship here, we're going to pack it out. There are some things we can do this year to be ready for you to bring the second ship next year. It's three things important for you to have a vibrant city. You got to have transportation by air, by land, and by sea. Well, by air, currently you got to come all the way from the regional airport. We hope by next year we'll have airplanes landing at Brooklyn Field just down the street. We hope there'll be a cheaper flight from down there. We'll have more people here. We're going to pack up the ship. We want a second ship. We're going to go further than you ever gone before if we pack it up for you.
Okay, we'll stop it right there. So there we go. Pack it out. So we're packing it. Okay. Of course, this question, I'm happy with the news. Another year extension here for Carnival. And here in the full presser, we can link it through on our Facebook page. You get a lot more people talking about it and what it means for the city. I sure wish we could take it to the next level for a long-term contract. It's year to year now, and with all those things being said, you know, here's the problem, is they hold all the cards. And once again, I'm not negative. This is positive for having this cruise ship here. But the cruise companies hold the cards, right? Because there are so many places that want a cruise ship to come in. So, you know, year to year, maybe that's the best deal we can get. But you sure like to have some kind of angle, something that gives us some leverage on this that would say, hey, we would like to have a, you know, longer-term deal with you, Carnival. We'll see. I know the administration and the council, they're all working that angle as well. We'll see if we have anything to negotiate with, any place of strength as we go down the road. But another year of the Carnival fantasy from right here in Mobile. All right, coming right back, we'll take you to the southern border. Of course, yesterday, a lot of news from down at San Ysidro near San Diego. Brendan Kirby joins us to talk more about that. And also, pretty interesting turn, as Republicans started gaining traction decades ago in the South, in the suburbs where they started. Now Democrats are doing the same thing. Is it turning around here? Is the pendulum swinging the other way? We'll talk about that when we return.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
At 12:35, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here. And I mentioned this earlier, but coming up in hour number two of the show, we'll talk more about it. The story is, you know, you'd say, oh, that's last week's story, but I think it's going to be the story ongoing, and that is the wildfires around this country. But in the case of recently 83 dead, 100 still missing in those fires in California. And what about forest management? We've mentioned it time or two here, and I've given you my amateur version of forest management. What could be done better? I have a friend of mine and a full-time forester. DJ Landrum from Landco Forestry is going to join us coming up after 1 o'clock. We'll talk more about that. Also mentioned, you know, yesterday, what was going on at the border as the caravan arrived, right? It has arrived at Tijuana, and some of the caravan trying to make it across the border. And what a story on the video coming in from there. The question is, where do we go from here? And we bring in my buddy, Brendan Kirby, author of Wicked Mobile. Also, check out his blog, Kirby on Politics, and get Kirby's take. And that's what we're going to do right now. Hey, man. Brendan, you with me? Did we lose Brendan? Oh, there we go. Brendan.
Yeah, hey, how you doing?
There we go. We had to have all the right buttons pushed in here. yesterday, your reaction, first of all, to watching the drama play out on the border?
This is predictable, right? Mm-hmm. Despite the talk that this was some sort of a fake or made-up story, we've been tracking this for weeks, haven't we? thousands of people making their way up, and it kind of reminds me, remember back in the 80s in the Falkland Islands War, And there was like a week-long run-up to that because it took the British Navy, you know, weeks to get down there. So everyone knew the war was coming. But, you know, you just had to wait for it to get there. So that's sort of, you know, what's going on here. And you know, before people jump over me, I'm not comparing, right, you know, these migrants
to
the
war. Saying the time.
Only in that we saw the end result is predictable what would happen. And, you know, we saw it when they crashed across the Mexican border from Central America. You know, the images were similar. So, you know, not surprising.
That president threatening to shut the U.S. border with Mexico permanently if Mexico doesn't do something about the caravan, right?
Yeah, that's what he's threatening, and I'm sure he's going to get pushback from the courts on that. You know, the president has authority to do things like this, but I don't know if a president has ever said, I'm closing the entire border permanently, you know, forever. And, you know, I'm just given the reaction of the courts to other actions that Trump has taken, I'd be surprised if there wasn't pushback from the courts on that, and that would test the limits of presidential authority to do that. And what's more, though, I mean, you know, you can close the ports of entry when you say close the border. It just means we're not going to let anyone through the ports of entry. But if we could close the actual border, then we would do it and we wouldn't have an illegal immigration problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very long border and people get through. And the way the courts have interpreted asylum law, as long as you step into the United States and claim asylum, then you're entitled under asylum law, you know, to have your due process hearing. And this is the crux of the problem. I keep saying this because it's not very well explained in the national media. The reason we're having a crisis here is because of a court settlement from back in the Clinton administration where they agreed they weren't going to detain illegal immigrant children past 20 days. And a federal judge with jurisdiction over that case subsequently has ruled that you also can't detain children with their parents. So if you come across as a family, you can't detain them all together. So the choice is either to arrest the parents and send the children to a relative, which, you know, is what the Trump administration tried and got that big blowback, or let everyone go into the United States and wait years for their asylum case to be, adjudicated, because it takes a long time. And a lot of people, and I can't remember what the stat is now off the top of my head, but it's something like close to half of people who get into the United States through that credible fear test that's applied at the border don't even bother filing an asylum claim once they're in the United States, because it would probably fail. You know, most of these asylum cases, are not actually valid claims under asylum law. But the trick is to get into the country, because once you do, it's hard to get you to leave the country. And that's why we have it. And really, I think only Congress can solve this. Congress could pass a law changing the terms of that settlement and providing for the detention of illegal immigrants, whether they're single males coming alone or families, until their claims are adjudicated. And if people knew that they were going to be detained for months on end, for a claim that probably wasn't going to be successful and they were going to be sent home, I think you would see a huge drop in this type of migration.
You know, you mentioned something. I talked about this again this morning. So the blowback, and wherever you are on this issue, it seems like the blowback and the howls of outrage on social media were directed towards the Border Patrol. And this is the same thing I say, you know, whatever the law is, people are upset with law enforcement for enforcing it. They seem to focus on law enforcement and not on the legislative branch. You know, I mean, the insults and all that should be hurled at members if they disagree with the policy of the legislature, not the people that are tasked with enforcing the law.
Well, and especially not ICE. I mean, a lot of the...
Right, that's their job.
Has been directed at ICE. You know, there's calls to abolish ICE.
Yes.
And there have been protests outside of ICE offices. And that makes even less sense because ICE has nothing to do with that policy. That's Border Patrol carrying out that policy. And as you say, they're carrying out policy based on the directive of the executive branch, saying this is what you're going to do. But, you know, if you want to take it out on the people who are carrying out the policy, you would do at the Border Patrol, but yet you don't really hear calls to eliminate Border Patrol, right? It's
no, but they were calling them animals.
That makes no sense.
Right, but they were calling them animals and heartless and all these things as, you know, their job is to... And I'm not doing this just for effect. I ask this question really not just rhetorically, honestly. What would you have them do? When the people go to scale the wall to come over, do you stand aside? I mean, what do you do there?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think what a lot of people in this country would like them to do is what the Obama administration did, which is to take them into custody, take them back to a Border Patrol processing station, fingerprint them to make sure they're not a terrorist or, you know, someone with an arrest warrant or something for a serious crime, and then let them go. And that is the genesis of the catch and release policy you've probably heard about, which is what was happening, particularly the last few years of the Obama administration. Border Patrol was under orders, and this isn't even just children. They were under orders that if an illegal immigrant was arrested near the border by Border Patrol and claims to have been in the United States continuously since before January 1st, 2014, they were just going to let him go. And they weren't even issuing them notices to appear in court. They were just flat out cutting them loose, saying that we're only going to focus on recent arrivals. So, you know, I interviewed a Border Patrol agent, and he's describing how this policy played out. He said, so if they say they were here before January 2014, even if they were soaking wet from mm-hmm. having just come out of the Rio Grande, they had to let them go. That creates an obvious incentive to come across the border and say, I've been here all this time, because you let them go. But that's the end game, I think, for a lot of mass immigration advocates. There's not really much point in even having a Border Patrol if that's going to be the response. You can make sure that like a known terrorist doesn't come in if you arrest them or whatever. But it certainly creates a huge incentive for people to spend their life savings paying smugglers to get them to the U.S. border and taking a journey where very dangerous. I think we don't appreciate the risks people take to come up, the Mexican countryside. Women and girls get sexually assaulted at frighteningly high rates. A lot of people die in the desert or in tractor trailers trying to smuggle across. Mm-hmm. It's a terrible situation from a human situation.
So, I mean, what do we do going forward? If this is this group, you know, I don't know where they go from here, if they turn around and go home, or Mexican authorities, I know Tijuana seems to be ready for something to happen to get them out of there, but they said there's more folks on the way. What if this continues on? I mean, we have to have some policy going forward. There has to be some agreement of what we do. What is policy on the border when a caravan or whatever, a mass of people hits the northern border of Mexico?
Yeah, well, I mean, and again, I've made this point before as well, but we're confusing things by focusing just on this caravan or on these caravans, because the fact is a caravan's worth of people comes across our border illegally every few days. It doesn't get the headlines because they're trickling across in small groups and not a big, you know, traveling group like this. And that's the real issue. And, you know, there are things we can do, but it requires a national consensus that our immigration law should be enforced and we should have a border. And if you don't have that consensus, it makes it very hard to do. And it's hard to really look at the U.S. Congress now and say that there's a consensus for enforcing immigration laws, because, you know, there's many, many Democrats who fundamentally at this point don't think that we should prevent people from coming in, unless they have committed, some sort of a serious crime. Imagine if like half the country, I mean, it's sort of similar, I guess, to, speed limits, right?
Mm-hmm.
or very few people obey speed limits. And so there's just sort of a tolerance. And unless someone is really going fast, then they'll pull that person over. But they're not going to pull over someone for doing, 10 miles over the speed limit, because everybody is. And when a consensus breaks down, for the law, it makes it hard to enforce. But, there are things we can do. And in the Clinton administration, they had a similar crisis with Haitians and Cubans who were coming over. Now, they weren't coming over land. They were coming over, through the Florida Straits. We had that wet foot, dry foot policy for the Cubans, saying if you got on land in Florida, then you got special protection. So what the Clinton administration did is they were scooping these people up out of the water, and they were taking them to the Guantanamo Bay facility and holding them there while their asylum claims were processed. It's a different connotation, obviously, because, it was pre-9/11, so we weren't using Gitmo as a prisoner of war camp. They took some very hard-line tactics, and they adopted a first-in, first-out policy where, to cut down on the backlog, they did the newest cases first through, the asylum and immigration court. And it had an effect. They whittled down the backlog. I interviewed a lawyer who helped consult the administration in setting up the system, and he said that they cut down a very large backlog in a very relatively short amount of time by doing that. People respond to incentives, if the incentive is that you're going to be allowed to stay here as long as you bring your child, people are going to bring their children more, and we're seeing it in record numbers now. We've never had this family migration as high as it is, because people know. People who've been interviewed in Mexico with their children know this. They know that their ticket into the country is to bring their kid or somebody's kid. It doesn't necessarily have to be their own, and that will get them into the country. They can pass the first credible fear hurdle by saying the right words, and then they are allowed, and then they know they're not going to be held, and then they're released, and they're supposed to show up for court. And I think something I did in the last fiscal year, the previous fiscal year, of all the people who came in and claimed asylum, something like 1% of them had been deported, of the families, the family units they call them, from Central America. And that's really the state of it. And, unless we want to actually stop that, we're not going to be able to stop it.
Yeah, and that's a good point, because I think in having a fair discussion of this, and people say, well, comprehensive immigration reform, whatever, but knowing that the responsibility is borne on both sides, those coming to our border and those laws and systems that incentivize it right here in the United States. Coming right back, more with Brendan Kirby as we roll on Monday edition of Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
At 12:52, FM Talk 106.5, and continuing our conversation with Brendan Kirby, author of Wicked Mobile, also full-time author over at Kirby on Politics and Kirby's Take. If people want to get to the blog, how do they find you?
Yeah, go to Kirby on Politics. Weebly.com, you can get the blog there. You can go to Twitter at Brendan K. Kirby and get it there as well.
And also, reminder, today Cyber Monday, so if you feel compelled to buy your copy of Wicked Mobile online because it's Cyber Monday, you can do that as well.
Yeah, you can go to Arcadia Publishing directly and get it there. You can go to other booksellers, Amazon. You can, if you wanted to cyberize it, of course, you can go to local bookstores in the area and get it in person as well.
There we go. All right. I want to talk about a top story you have up at Kirby on Politics. This is interesting. I love watching trends like this, at least through your eyes, because you find them. Southern Democrats were regaining the suburbs. Now, you talk about, take us back to 1978 and talk about what happened. That was based on Georgia's 6th district. And walk us through what's happening today from then.
Yeah, and I'm just looking at the results of this most recent election, and I've been reading Craig Shirley's excellent book on Newt Gingrich called Citizen Newt. This is the Reagan biographer, Craig Shirley. And he looks at Newt Gingrich's whole career in Congress, starting with his runs for Congress in Georgia as a young college professor in the 1970s. He tried twice and lost, and then he finally broke through in 1978 and won in the 6th District. It was the first time the 6th District ever had a Republican representative. And at the time, Newt was the only Republican in the entire Georgia delegation, House and Senate, and that just tells you how much the South has changed since then. It was still dominated by Democrats all over. And it's a suburban district that started in the suburbs south of Atlanta, and that district at the time went to the Alabama line, and then in redistricting, it kind of migrated north, and now it's in the northern suburbs. But that's where Republicans broke through and started chipping away at the solid South. It was in the suburbs, not just there, but the year before that, Bob Livingston had won a special election in the first congressional district in Louisiana, which is in the New Orleans suburbs. There were two congressmen from Texas, Republican congressmen, who were elected the same year Newt was. One of them you might be familiar with, named Ron Paul.
Yep.
Who won in a district that went from the suburbs of Houston down to the Gulf Coast. So Republicans were starting to make inroads in the 1970s, even though, you know, the rest of the states, you know, the inner cities and the rural areas were still solidly Democrat, and that's where it started, and they started chipping away. And now, you know, we sort of come full circle, because now these places, other than the majority black districts in the South, have been dominated by Republicans in Georgia and elsewhere. And on the election this month, Newt Gingrich's old district, the 6th, flipped from red to blue. Lucy McBath was able to defeat Karen Handel, the incumbent Republican there. And there's another Republican, Rob Woodall, who barely hung on in the neighboring district. And, you know, there are other places in the South where Democrats won suburban, you know, urban districts, or almost did. You know, one of them, and this is not really technically the South, but sort of, in Oklahoma, Steve Russell represented a district in Oklahoma City, and it had been Republican since 1975, when the Democratic incumbent switched parties. And at the time, he was the only Republican in the Oklahoma House delegation. And now, the Democrat who won that seat will be the only Democrat in the Oklahoma delegation. So, you know, can Democrats kind of keep this up and copy the Republican model and extend their gains to other parts of these states or not? I mean, that's an open question. But, you know, the Democrats today in the South look a lot like the Republicans did 40 years ago.
And it's a changing demographics. We only have a minute left, but is it a changing demo or voting patterns, or what is it?
You know, I mean, I think part of it is, you know, the suburbs are getting more diverse. You know, ethnically, and minorities tend to vote Democrat more. Republicans are doing worse than they used to among better educated voters who tend to live in the suburbs. So I think that's part of it, younger voters. And this is particularly in places like Atlanta that draw a lot of young people in, a lot of young professionals in. And I think that's why we haven't seen it, at least yet, in Alabama so much, because we, you know, we're not drawing in those younger millennial type people in large numbers. So, you know, the suburbs have remained pretty Republican here, but in places with big cities that are pulling in a lot of younger voters, you know, that's what's happening. And then I think you get a mix of, you know, people moving in from all over. And this is why Republicans broke through there, I think, first, originally, is because people from the North who are Republicans moved down and they brought their voting habits with them. And now people from other parts of the country who are more Democratic, who are settling in these places, you know, are doing the same thing. So I think it's a combination of things.
There he is, Brendan Kirby. As always, we appreciate it. We're coming right back. Hour number 2 of Midday Mobile next.